This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I will never forget Pete Rose. As long as I live, I'll never get in arguments, in as many arguments, with people as I've gotten in arguments about Pete Rose and the Hall of Fame. Do you really want to hear me do that again? No, you'd rather hear me tell you that you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM, and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Pete Rose joined the morning show this week. I don't even think it was part of the celebrity week. It wasn't, because that was Damon Bruce's show. You will not hear Damon Bruce's voice in this next interview. But Pete Rose, say what you want about the guy, but he is entertaining, and no way I was going to let this weekend pass without replaying that interview. I love me some Pete Rose. You're going to enjoy it, too.
Good morning, Pete. How you doing?
How you guys doing? I'm doing wonderful. I watched the game last night. That was a boring situation, to say the least. I mean, you know, you watched the night before. It's amazing to me that you can have a home run derby, which they did on Monday night, and it was 10 times better than the game. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but can pitching be that good that the National League can only get 5 hits and the other team can only get 8 hits? After all, the way the balls flew out of the ballpark tonight. But we see it every year. I mean, we just, and we know this, that good pitching stops good hitting. But my question is, when the season resumes tomorrow night, I guess there's a game, and everybody else plays on Friday, when's all the good pitching going to step forward?
Well, it's a situation, Pete, where maybe it's not so much good pitching as it is bad hitting, and you've got a Major League Baseball where every year since 2006, the number of strikeouts have increased year over year. Is it more about baseball's approach to offense and the actual construction of the ball? Is it more about that than it is about good pitching?
I think you're right. I mean, it's just like last night. All the National League had to do is get a couple timely base hits, singles, and they score 6 or 7 runs and win the game. But everybody thinks that the long ball, the girls like the long ball, as they say. And everybody drops that back shoulder and tries to elevate. And we see the same thing during the season. In the first half of the season this year, guys, we had 3 teams. One team did it twice. 3 teams hit 8 home runs in one game. Now, is that batting practice during the game? It's not normal. I mean, I played against some pretty good players, some pretty good pitching. And I'm not criticizing the players, because the players go out there and play, and they use the balls that they put out there. And when you get guys like Justin Verlander, who starts criticizing the ball, and he's an MVP, he's a Cy Young winner, he's a veteran of 10 or 12 years, you know, he's not blowing smoke. I mean, Justin Verlander knows what the balls are like. And if you watch him pitch, he throws every other ball he throws out of play, like it's too hard or something. Now, I know when I played, they made the balls in Haiti. I think they make the balls in Costa Rica today. And, you know, the commissioner, he'll say, well, the balls are doing strange things, but we're not responsible for it. Well, don't they own the company that makes the balls?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so do you make that statement that the balls are traveling further than they used to, but we're not responsible? Well, who the hell is responsible? Who's making the balls? And I'm not blaming the players at all, because if you throw rocks up there and the players are in uniform, they got to play. They have to play. And I think the players, you heard the players last night, a couple of them, like the center fielder and the left fielder, they asked him about the ball, and they both said, oh, the ball is perfect today. Let it alone. Well, one of them's got 31 home runs, the other's got 30 home runs. You know, that would be Yelich and the kid from L.A. So If that's what they want, that's what they got. But I don't think, you know, I know for a fact, and I think you guys too, that strikeouts are up, okay? Home runs are up, and attendance is down.
Sure.
That can't be a good thing for Major League Baseball. You know, like, we got a team out here. I live in Las Vegas, so we got a new Triple A team out here. And I don't know if this is true today, but it was true 2 weeks ago. We were averaging, the Triple A team was averaging 9,800 a game. Okay? Miami was averaging 9,300. Now, when you got a new team, and Las Vegas is not the biggest baseball city in the world, there's outdrawing a team from Miami, Florida. There's some trouble somewhere along the line in the world of baseball.
No question. No question. If you were playing today, what effect would that have on you with the ball today, if any?
Well, I don't know. I don't know because, you know, I only hit 160 home runs, but I hit line drives.
Sure.
And I think line drives today go out of the ballpark, just like Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron had 755 home runs. He wasn't a long ball hitter. I mean, when I say that, every week someone hits someone like Odor from Texas, a second baseman, hit one 462.
Right.
The next day someone hits one 505. I mean, Hank Aaron hit line drives out of the ballpark. If you hit the ball hard in these ballparks we're playing in today, that's another thing. You know, before we start blaming the players about the balls, I mean, I can name you ballparks that's a joke to pitch in. Houston's a joke to pitch in. Cincinnati, okay? Camden Yards, Philadelphia, Colorado, Arizona, the new ballpark in Atlanta. The ball flies out of there like it's a little league ballpark. And that's what baseball wants, and that's what they're getting. So it's just a matter of time before they understand that they're not playing baseball today. They're playing long ball. They're playing long ball. I mean, the bunting game's out of the game. Stealing bases is out of the game. You know, those are exciting plays, stealing third, scoring on an infield hitter, a sacrifice fly. I wonder how many sacrifice flies are hitting baseball today. There's probably more home runs than a man out third than fly balls to get the run in. And it just seems to me like most teams today, we know the Yankees aren't in this situation, but most teams today are just playing the game and aren't really worried whether they win or not.
The Hit King, Pete Rose, with us here on 95.7 The Game. And, Pete, you were an All-Star 17 times in your Major League career.
Yeah.
Take us back through your All-Star game experience. What did it mean for you to rep, whether it was the Reds or the Phillies, the teams that you played for? What was it like to represent those teams and represent them in the All-Star game?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's changed this way, though, and I'll tell you why. Because we had no interleague play except spring training play, All-Star games, and World Series. And we used to have a league president named Warren Giles, who was Bill Giles' dad. He was the league president. His office was in Cincinnati. And don't forget, my first 16 years in baseball with the Reds, I had one-year contracts. And he used to come in to give us a pregame meeting. And his veins in his neck would pop out because he believed the All-Star game was the time and period to prove to the world that the National League was superior to the American League. And he'd say, if you want to make this team next year, you better bust your ass today because I want to win the game. And in those days, guys, you wanted to make the All-Star team because that gave you a nugget to negotiate your next year's contract with. And I can't imagine Willie Mays or Hank Aaron, Willie from San Francisco, Hank from Atlanta, flying over to New York to play an All-Star game, getting one or two at-bats and taking a hike. Well, we used to make the games. When I was in the outfield, I had to beat out Mays, Aaron, and Clemente to make the team. So it was tough to make the starting lineup. And we all did one thing. We wanted to win the game. And I played in 17 of them, like you just said, and we lost one. The only one we lost was up in Detroit when Reggie hit the ball off of Doc Ellis and went out of Yellowstone Park. It hit the transformer on top of the right field wall. I mean, that's the only game we lost, but we took the game seriously, and we wanted to win the game. I mean, I wasn't doing anything different in 1970 when I collided with Ray Fosse. I was trying to win the game. I was within the rules. If we were playing today, he would have been wrong because he was blocking the plate. You're not allowed to block the plate today. But the advantage I had in that situation is he's reaching out to catch the ball, and the ball didn't get to him yet. if he's got the ball, he's going to plant me in the middle of next week. It's just like the other day at that collision with Lucroy down in Houston. Mm-hmm. He's reaching out for the ball. You can't concentrate on two things. But if you've got the ball and you got all that equipment on, and you brace yourself for a guy sliding, the guy sliding's in trouble.
Pete Rose here on 95.7 The Game. I want to get your comments on an excerpt from Bud Selig's book talking about Barry Bonds in the summer of 2007. The book says, quote, 2007 was unpleasant for me when I look back. Putting it mildly, even though I didn't like Barry Bonds, I was going to chase him from city to city all over the country to watch him chase his version of history. I did it because it was my job. What do you make of the former commissioner having to really tough it out like that, Pete, to follow the home run leader?
Well, I think that baseball should have woke up. And I might get this year wrong, but when did Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire have that home run derby?
98.
Okay, 98. Okay, I played with George Foster, I believe, in 77. And he had 52 home runs. So from 77 to 98, no player in the National League hit over 50 home runs. Then all of a sudden, this year comes up, and two of them go past Roger Maris's 61 home runs. Now, when did the light go off in baseball? There's something's up with the ball or something's up with these athletes. And they didn't care because it was bringing people back to the ballpark. And I believe Bud Selig was in charge at that time. So, you know, I mean, they turned ahead to the steroid situation, because they saw how exciting people got watching Sosa and watching McGuire have that home run contest during the season. And all of a sudden, I don't think Barry Bonds took steroids until that happened. Because I think Barry said, well, I'll show you guys. In the next couple of years, he broke that record and later on hit 73 home runs or something like that. So, you know, baseball, they can say all they want about steroids and stuff like that, but I believe they turned their head to what was going on in the world of baseball.
Couldn't agree with you more, Pete. There is a manager and skipper that we have here, Bruce Bochy. Well,
yeah.
What are some of the fondest memories, and what do you think people are going to remember most about the skipper?
Oh, he's a winner. I mean, Bruce is a great guy and a great winner. What I remember about him is the 1980 playoffs, and I had a collision home plate with him, and almost knocked his head off.
That big head? I mean,
yeah. That was the first time in my life. We're playing Houston. I'm talking about the Phillies for the right to go to the World Series. And Mazinski hit a double down the left field line. I'm on first. So when I'm going around second, I can see where the ball is. I don't have to rely on the coach. And I knew the ball was going to hit the wall and go up in the air. And I just, Billy DeMars, our third base coach, he put the stop sign on, and I just kept going. The first time I ever run through a stop sign. And guys, I'm out 30 feet. I'm out by 30 feet. That's embarrassing to be out by 30 feet. But the shortstop short hopped Bruce Bochy. And when he short hopped him, I hit him with my right arm right over his face and his head, and he missed the ball, and we won the game. So, but Bruce was a, you know, he was a bulldog behind the plate. And, you know, Bruce would be the first one to tell you, you guys know what makes a good manager or a good coach in football or basketball? Do you have any idea what makes those guys become good?
Managing personalities probably right now is probably the toughest thing for a manager to do, in handling 25 guys in the clubhouse.
I tell people this every day, and when you hear it, you'll understand it. There's one thing makes a good manager in baseball, and it's good players.
Yep.
It's good players that play good. I mean, Cora's got the same players at Boston this year as they had last year. He's 10 games out. Boone's got the same players with a lot of injuries that he had on the roster last year, but he's in first place. You know, if you got good players that play good, you got a chance of winning. I never heard of a good manager that had bad players. There isn't such a thing. You know, all you do is create an atmosphere at the ballpark if you're a manager or a coach. Make it fun to come to. How many teams right now are we watching in baseball where when we get to August and it gets hot and they have no chance of going to playoffs or a wild card? How hard is it to get your players to bust their ass every day
Sure.
when they're in that situation? And there's a lot of teams going to be in that situation. You understand what I'm saying? And this is the truth. And let me tell you another thing, and I hope you guys agree. If you don't, let me know. I think the best thing in the world for you and I as players, is multi-year contracts. But you and I as fans, it's not good. Because if I give you $10 million a year for 8 years, why are you worried about playing every game? You'll come to the ballpark and play whenever you want to play. You're going to get paid. You don't need to put numbers up. Sparky used to tell me, okay, give me 25 players that go to spring training every year on the last year of a contract, and I'll go to the World Series every year. Because everybody's going to be busting their ass to get numbers so they can negotiate your new contract. Does that make any sense?
Perfect sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
Everybody today's got multi-guaranteed contracts. It's just like, you remember Jimmy Butler, great basketball
player. Yeah.
He was with Minnesota, and he got traded to Philadelphia. And the first thing he says when he gets over there, he says, well, they told me I was only going to play 31 minutes, and they made me play 37 minutes. What? Are you kidding me? If he was on the last year of the contract, he'd want to play 47 minutes.
So you think it's a bad thing, Pete, that a lot of these, we're seeing these young stars now, whether it's a Nolan Arenado, whether it's Acuna at Atlanta, they're taking these long-term contracts, and teams are buying out some of their arbitration years, but at the same time, a lot of money's going their way, and
yeah,
maybe they could have gotten more player-friendly deals, but some team-friendly deals as well.
It's called security. I mean, look at me. You're a baseball player today, and you go in the clubhouse, and there's a sheet up on the board, and it says, if you play today, you get paid. If you don't play today, you don't get paid. Those guys would never take a day off.
they'd all become Cal Ripken.
They'd all become Cal Ripken. Because, you know, you're making whatever it is a day, and all of a sudden you're going to take a day off because you're tired because you played a night game after a day game after a night game, or you traveled from coast to coast. No, I wanted to play 180 games and make it easier to get 200 hits, easier to score 100 runs, easier to get 40 doubles.
You'd end up with 5,000 hits then.
Well, I mean, but I wasn't a lone survivor on the Big Red Machine. Tony Perez didn't miss any games. Johnny Bench caught more games than anybody. Our job was to go to the ballpark and play the game of baseball.
Last thing for you, Pete.
You're after 2.5 hours.
I want to ask you about your book that just hit newsstands last month, Play Hungry, The Making of Baseball Player by Pete Rose. When fans can pick up this book, what are they going to learn about you?
Oh, they're going to learn why I played like I did. It's because of my dad. The relationship I had, I wish everybody listening to you and I talk right now could have a relationship with their dad like I had with my dad. But I was very fortunate, guys, because don't forget, I grew up in the 40s and 50s, and I had a father who was a tremendous athlete, probably the best football player ever to come out of Cincinnati. So I was always with him on the football game, baseball game, basketball game, bat boy, water boy, ball boy, and he taught me the correct way to play the game, very punctual. Very aggressive. And I believe if you're around aggressive parents, you're going to be aggressive. If you're around laid-back parents, you're probably going to be laid-back. I was very, very lucky to have the type of father that I did. And I talk about my father throughout the whole book because, to be honest with you, he's the reason I did what I did. You know, I put the effort into it, but he exposed me to the game of sports, and he exposed me to learning how to win the game and how important winning was when you play the game. I mean, everybody's listening to you and I talk right now. If you got grandkids, you got nieces, you got nephews, you got sons, you got daughters, and they're into sports, and you go watch them play, don't tell me you're not in a better mood on the way home if they do something positive and they win the game. You are. And
very true.
You shouldn't be going to games. It's not rocket science, guys, and it's the same little league level as it is the big league level. If you get to the big league, like my first full year in the minor leagues, we won the championship in Tampa Bay, Florida State League Championship. My second full year in Macon, we won the Sally League Championship. So when I got to Cincinnati, I was already ready to win because I've experienced it 2 years in a row. And when you have that attitude, that feeling, it makes your job a little easier at the big league level.
Well, great stuff, Pete. Really appreciate you making time for us this morning. Again, the book, Play Hungry, The Making of a Baseball Player by Pete Rose.
Walgreens, trusted since 1901.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame? No, I'm not going to do that to you, unless you'd really like to weigh in on it, because I do have a spirited argument against Pete Rose being in the Hall of Fame. It's not even an argument, it's just the rules. It's just the rules. If you'd like to get into it, you're more than welcome to give us a call. We'll discuss it civilly, and when we're done, you'll say, you're right, Herbs, I was wrong. Thank you for setting me straight. Text line says, Mr. Rose is awesome. Thanks, 95.7. Yeah, I figured weekend audience needs to hear this. I mean, Pete Rose is a fascinating character. The debate about his Hall of Fame worthiness is not a debate that's going to go away. Here's my theory on the whole thing. Well, not theory. First off, I'll give you my stance on the whole thing. Pete Rose does not deserve to go to the Hall of Fame. That's not the right word. All those hits, yeah, he deserves to. However, he broke the one rule that I will guarantee you every Major League Baseball player is aware of, and many of them see it every day because many clubhouses post this one rule, and it's basically, don't bet on baseball or you're banned for life. For life. It's not, you don't get parole. You don't get put on probation after a while. It's for life. I'm thinking to the only solution that's going to make everybody feel both the pro-Rose and the anti-Rose, there's one way that's going to make everybody feel kind of okay. And I think that's the best we can hope for in the Pete Rose situation. He was banned for life, right? Okay. The day after he passes away, put him in the Hall of Fame. He served his life sentence. Now he's taking a dirt nap. And now we get to put him where he belongs, among the game's immortals. But I am fine, very much so, with him not going into the Hall of Fame ever, because I know, I see that rule in every clubhouse I walk into. It's right in your dish. Everybody knows about it. And you can say the punishment doesn't fit the crime. You can give me any kind of reason you think he should be in. And I will simply counter it by saying the rule's posted in every clubhouse. It's the only rule that baseball makes sure that it's brought to everybody's attention who works in baseball. That's it. 707 rules were meant to be broken. Okay. Is that Jose Canseco? I thought he called. I didn't know he texted us too. 650, all-time hits leader and all-time home run king. Not in the MLB Hall of Fame makes baseball a mother beep joke. That's from E in Redwood City. I think it's a joke that Barry Bonds is not in the Hall of Fame strictly because Bud Selig is in the Hall of Fame. Bud Selig presided over the most regrettable era, in American sport. And he gets put in the Hall of Fame, lickety split. And you're not going to let Bonds in. Uh-huh. Okay, yeah, that makes no sense whatsoever. If Selig hadn't been put in the Hall of Fame so quickly, it's like they were dying to get him in. And it's just, it's ludicrous that this guy is being celebrated in with the ultimate honor of his sport when he played such a pivotal role in not bringing to, but allowing his great game to be sullied by cheats. He knew they were cheating. Everybody knew. Come on. Tony La Russa, Hall of Fame manager, brilliant guy. But he's not above lying through his teeth. And when he says that he didn't know McGuire and Canseco and anybody else were juicing up while he was managing them, you're not really buying that, do you? I'm not buying that at all. There were a lot of people who are complicit in the steroid era. It's a regrettable era. There's no doubt. We all wish it didn't happen, but it did. And the Baseball Hall of Fame, what's it there for? To celebrate the history of the game, right? You can't write the history of the game without the McGuire-Sosa home run chase or Bonds chasing down Hank Aaron. Now, were Hank Aaron's home runs more legit than Bonds? Probably some of them. But that doesn't change the fact that Barry Bonds is the best home run hitter to live. And he didn't bet on baseball. Pete bet on baseball, people. Let's go to Esquire in Vallejo. Esquire, what's going on? How are you?
How's it going?
It's going well.
All righty. I think with Pete Rose, you had two different parts of his career. He was caught gambling as a manager.
The rule applies to
as a player.
Esquire, the rule does not just apply to players. It applies to everybody who works in Major League Baseball.
Yes, but it was two separate portions of his career. But now you take Shoeless Joe. It's been proven that he didn't gamble, but everybody else did, and he got caught up in the loop and never got a reprieve.
That is true. Look at his numbers. Didn't look like he was trying to throw that series. He was going off.
Now you take Barry Bonds, McGuire, and Sosa. Number one, they never tested positive. Number two, at that time, steroids were not illegal.
Well, they weren't against baseball's rules specifically. They very much were illegal. You couldn't just go down to AMPM and pick up some D-ball, you know what I'm saying?
I meant baseball didn't have a rule. Like years ago when people used to do speed, at first they didn't have a rule against that. Then they came with a rule against speed. Then with the steroids, they didn't have a specific rule saying you couldn't take steroids. Of course, steroids, yeah, you can't get them like you can get acetaminophen. But to have them in the system and say that they violated a baseball rule, at that time, and especially since they never tested dirty, it's just an assumption that they did.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of circumstantial evidence. Bonds, in fact, has even admitted to taking the cream in the clear. He just says he didn't know that it was a banned substance. He thought it was, what did he say, flaxseed oil? He thought it was flaxseed oil. Come on. These guys are so hyper aware of what they're putting in their body. You really expect us to believe that somebody is going to, let's see, this guy is a known steroids dealer. But he's also a health consultant, and he decided to give me some of his balms. So I'm just going to try it. I don't know anything about it. I'm just going to stick it on my arms, rub it on my chest. Oh, wait, that triggered a positive test? Oh, maybe I should read the labels from now on. How many times have you heard the most recent drug suspension in baseball? It was Frankie Montas. It was an over-the-counter supplement. He like went into a GNC or something and bought this and clearly did not read the ingredients, because some of the ingredients in that particular supplement are banned by the sport of baseball. There's something wrong with you being able to buy something over-the-counter that is a health product, and you end up losing your livelihood for half a season? I don't quite get that. And if it's so bad for you, which in theory you would think that's why they're banned, right? Because baseball wants to protect their players from being damaged. Yeah, right. Unless they hit 60 homers, then knock yourself out, walnut sack. 888-957-9570 if you want to join the conversation. I really do not want to get into the whole Pete Rose thing. I think if you feel one way, if you think Rose should be in And you think you're going to convince somebody who doesn't think they should be in, that they're going to convince them? It's not going to happen. Neither side of that argument is ever, ever going to budge. And like I said, once Pete Rose passes away, his lifetime sentence will have been served. So put him in posthumously the very next day. I'm dying to hear what our next guest thinks of that cockamamie idea. He is an award-winning columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, one of the best writers in the country, and the father to one of my favorite producers here at 95.7 The Game. We are joined now by Scott Osler. What's going on, Scott? How are you?
Herbs, how you doing, buddy?
I am fantastic. First off, did you happen to catch everything that went down in Anaheim yesterday?
I caught it. I didn't watch it live, but I read about it. It's fantastic.
I was there
2 weeks ago, whatever it was, Friday night, when he pitched his last game in Anaheim. And then they played a couple more games, and they went on the road to Texas, and he died down in Texas. And it was weird and touching and very cool in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, you hear all the time that, you know, sports is a microcosm for life, or, you know, sports is the ultimate reality TV. I didn't watch the whole game itself. I just kind of caught the highlights, like sounds like you did, Scott. But you can't make that type of stuff up. I mean, the mom hopping up there and throwing a perfect strike. His birthday is 7/13, which is today, and the Angels scored 7 runs in the first inning, 13 runs overall. There's just all these strange, you know, confluence of things going on, and you can't help but think, yes, there are baseball gods, and they are working overtime tonight.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a believer or disbeliever in all that weird stuff, but somebody tells me different, I've got to believe there's some weird stuff going on.
Right? Hey, did you hear
remember that movie Angels in the Outfield?
I do remember it. I didn't see it, though.
Yeah, it was set with the Angels, you know? It was
right.
that there were forces beyond the pale that were controlling things. So I'm not trying to make a direct correlation, but yeah, it was kind of the same kind of deal.
Yeah, I mean, it was the name of that movie is Angels in the Outfield, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this was
right. 25 years ago, probably.
This was Angels in the Outfield, Angels on the Mound, Angels. Did you see what the players did with their 45 Skaggs jerseys after the game?
Put them all on the mound, right?
Yeah. I mean, just such cool stuff. And I was telling the audience earlier, Scott, I don't know if you remember this, when Fernandez of the Marlins, when he passed away in the boating accident, and the next day, Dee Gordon, one of his best friends on the team, hardly ever leaves the yard. He hit a home run in his first at bat and just lost it coming around third base. I mean, I get goosebumps just thinking about it. That's the unexplainable stuff of sport that makes it so cool, in my opinion.
Yeah, Herb, you and me have been around a lot of clubhouses and stuff.
Yep.
Bunch of young, rich guys hanging out, eating their stuff and hanging out, being cool and everything. But it's underneath, it's a family, and it's young guys who are bonding, there's a real team thing going there. And for this to have happened in Anaheim, obviously none of us wanted Tyler Skaggs to pass away, but what a great tribute to the guy.
Yeah, I don't think it could have gone any better. You know, there's only one other ceremonial first pitch that comes even close to that for me, and it was Bush after 9/11 throwing a strike at Yankee Stadium. I mean, it's not a political opinion at all. This is strictly sport, but given what the country was going through and knowing that, hey, major sporting events at that time had to be considered terrorist targets. And so, you know, he went up on that mound knowing there were snipers on the roof of Yankee Stadium and a lot going on, and he still threw a strike. That was cool. What I saw last night from Tyler Skaggs' mom was beyond cool.
Yeah, and thankfully, talking about that 9/11 stuff, thankfully the world is in a peaceful place, and that stuff can never happen again. We're all cool.
Yeah.
Right?
The memories are going to be there forever, though. And I don't think I'm ever going to forget the Tyler Skaggs night. It was just,
yeah,
it's about as cool as it can get. And it came at, at a decent time for baseball because, you know, the All-Star break is always a weird time for me, Scott. And I wonder if you go through the same thing. It's when we should be celebrating our game and the best players in our game. But it feels to me like over the past decade, Scott, it almost always gets hijacked by the commissioner's State of the Union address, and it becomes this negative thing. It's like throwing a big wet blanket over what should be, you know, a happy, joy, celebrate the big leagues day.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. And why couldn't it be that you have the All-Star game, and let's say a week before that or a week after that is when the commissioner does his State of the Game? Why does it have to tie in? Because you're absolutely right. It doesn't have to be at the same time. Just have it at a different time so we can fight and argue about what the commissioner says, and we hate him, we love him, and all that stuff. But why mar the game? Just the simplicity of the game, which is how it started out back in 1935, whatever it was. Just the best players getting together to play a baseball game.
Yeah, it's like it should be like a sandlot game. You know, I would, in fact, Scott, I would be in favor of baseball taking a page from basketball's playbook in terms of the All-Stars, like with LeBron and Giannis getting to, you know, basically choose up squads. It'd be more difficult, I think, in baseball than it would for basketball, but it still would be pretty damn cool.
Yeah, and I'm with doing away with one player per team and all that stuff. Just have it like a 22-man roster or whatever, 25-man, and just have the best players.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Six teams don't get a player on that. Too bad. Go ahead and get some better players.
Every team being represented in the All-Star game feels to me like the adult version of participation trophy.
It's the worst. It's absolutely the worst. I hate it.
We're talking to Scott Astler. He is a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. You can follow him on Twitter at Scott Astler. I'm not going to spell it because if you're listening to this show, you know damn well how to spell Scott Astler. Scott, how are you feeling about the Giants? They're getting close in the wild card race. Keep Mad Bum, right? Keep everyone now. Bye.
No. Yeah, I'm of the thinking that Farhan Zaidi has got to just look to the future. Whatever he does, it's nice if he can bolster the current club and let the guys do what they're doing. But if there's any chance to build for the future, that's what he's got to do. That's what he was brought in here for. And just because they've had like a nice 3 weeks shouldn't change that. Because, you know, people are saying, hey, come on, build up the team now. But if he does that and then passes on a chance to get two or three really good prospects, then next year you're sitting there thinking, hey, well, how come JD didn't do anything? So for me, it's all about the future.
Well, yeah, and look, what the Giants – Farhan went into this season knowing exactly what he had to do, and I'm sure he had a plan of how to execute that plan. And I don't know if the plan would have changed, Scott, if – like, let's say the Giants got off to a great start. Do you think – you think Farhan would have been tempted to change what he planned to do? I hope not. This rebuild has to be done.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he's a pretty, excuse the car horns in the background. I think he's a pretty pragmatic guy and a very smart guy. And a couple of things I like about him. One thing is that he's, even though he's a metrics guy and all in the numbers and all that stuff, like every modern GM, he's also got I could be wrong, but I think he's got a baseball soul, and I think he appreciates the old school aspects and the fact that baseball isn't just numbers. And I like his patience. I like the fact that I'm sure, I don't know what his email looks like. I'm sure he's got a lot of grief. Farhan, you came in and you,
right.
He sucks. You know? And he's willing to wait that out because he knows what the deal is. He seems like a pretty squared away guy.
Yeah, he is. And I said earlier in the program, I'm sure Giants fans aren't wild about the idea of somebody who, you know, helped build the Dodgers into the powerhouse that they are now is going to try to do the same thing in San Francisco. I've got some friends that they do not believe it. They're chanting like he's a double agent. He was set here to, you know, host the Giants forever and for all time. And obviously, that's a little bit ridiculous. But
yeah,
I get why it would feel odd to Giants fans because there's not only the Dodger connection, but there's the Oakland A's connection. I mean, Farhan cut his teeth with Billy Beane.
Yeah. But I think people have to step back. I know it's hard for fans to do this, but to step back and say, what's this guy really about? You know, is he a baseball guy? Is he legitimate? If he is,
he's coming in here to build our team because it reflects on him if he doesn't or if he does. This is his deal, and he's proven himself in other places, so why not give him a chance? I can't – the whole double agent or former Dodger and all that stuff is lost on me because it's not that it's a business, but it's just that Parham is really, I believe, here to build a ball team for the Giants.
I agree with you, and I certainly hope that Bruce Bochy is not managing a club that just – you know, let the season end already. It's probably asking too much to ask them to be playing meaningful games in September. I know a lot of fans look at it and say, oh, they're 4.5 back or 5.5, whatever they are right now in the wild card race. That number doesn't matter as much as the number of teams in front of you. And some fans just, they can't wrap their head around that, making up 5.5 games is... that's a challenge just to begin with if you're staring down one team. But we're talking about 8-9 teams that are ahead of the Giants in terms of record. And so they're not going to leapfrog all those teams. I think the best case scenario, and Scott, I want you to give me your best case scenario from now to the end of the year. But for me, it would be get a decent haul for Mad Bum, Will Smith, and whoever else you can move. And then just play competitive baseball and have it not be a dumpster fire when Bruce Bochy walks off that field for the last time.
Herbs, I'm with you 100%. And, the fans will all be disappointed when Mad Bum walks out the door and even Will Smith. But you have to look at the big picture and you have to appreciate this baseball is change. You know, baseball isn't you get your 25 guys and you stick with it for 5, 7, 10 years. It's just not, maybe it used to be that way 30, 40 years ago. It's just not the way anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's an ever-changing thing, and to have a team now that recognizes that and is kind of working with that, I'm all for it. Yeah.
The voice you hear is that of Scott Osler. He's a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. You can follow him on Twitter, @ScottOsler. You mind if we pivot to basketball for a couple minutes, Scott?
Fire away, man.
Okay, the first 12 hours of free agency, 48 players changed teams to the tune of $3.17 billion. And 4 days later, it was all the way up to $3.5 billion. I have never seen an offseason like this. I know you've covered the league quite a bit longer and more in depth than I have. Is this a good thing for the league, you think?
I think it's good, and it's a new reality. I was thinking back, I grew up in Los Angeles, and I was a Laker fan. They moved out from Minneapolis, and I was in, grammar school or whatever, and I latched on to them. And the thing, it was great being a Laker fan then, or a Celtic fan, because you knew that every year your team was going to be in the finals or close to the finals, right? But what about all the people in Atlanta and Detroit and places like that who were stuck behind the Celtics or behind the Lakers? So to me now, what this does is gives every fan hope. It gives every team hope that if you play the game and go out and get some players and develop have a strong front office and a strong philosophy and all that stuff like the Warriors do, then you're always going to be in it. But it's never going to be, okay, we got our team set, man. We're going to be okay for the next 10 years. Why should it be that way? Why shouldn't everybody have a chance? And I think the way it shook out this offseason with all the vast changes, I think it was phenomenal for the NBA and for basketball.
Yeah, and Scott, I'm, born and raised in the Bay Area, lifelong Warriors fan, and I'm looking forward to next season more than I was looking forward to the season that just passed. And that's not just me having clarity in hindsight, but just all the drama with KD and all that. I loved getting to watch him play every day for 3 years, and I don't begrudge him going out and getting his money. He's an odd dude. I don't think I'll ever understand him. I don't think he's ever going to find what he's looking for if he couldn't find it here. But it's kind of taking me back to the start of this dynastic run before KD got there, when they were kind of sneaking up on people. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but they were certainly underdogs. Nobody expected them to win the title that year. The moment KD signed a contract with the Warriors, they were going to be the prohibitive favorites to win it all every year that you had a healthy Curry and a healthy Durant on the same roster. And so now Durant's taking his leave, and it's kind of, turn the pages back a few, and let's try to get this thing rebooted. They've still got Steph. They've still got Draymond. And I like the pickups they've gotten. What do you think of Willie Cauley-Stein? They made some under Kevon Looney, getting him back at 3 years and $15 million. Bob Myers did a hell of a job in that first week after free agency.
Yeah. You know, I read somewhere that – I heard somewhere that Yahoo or whatever rated the offseason by the various teams, and they gave the Warriors a D as a dog. And I'm giving them – maybe I'm not an expert or whatever. I'm giving them at least an A-minus maybe. It's phenomenal stuff.
Just yesterday, Scott, I said
– Stein was a – you know, you don't – Will Chamberlain is dead. You don't get him anymore. You don't get Bill Russell. He's a pretty good center. He's a pretty good guy. D'Angelo Russell, he's an all-star who seems to be squared away in the head. He's coming to a team where he likes the guys, and if I'm a fan, I'm very excited about this year. I'm not thinking, well, over here we're a cinch for the finals, but I'm thinking we're going to be fun and competitive and interesting. It's going to be an interesting team.
I mean, think about it, Scott. If D'Angelo Russell and Willie Cauley-Stein have something of a smooth transition, and you get Steph and Draymond healthy until Clay gets back, if you're already looking at, like, let's say, I'll just pick a date. January 20th is when Clay comes back.
All right.
D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, that's a good date.
D'Angelo Russell has already become a fan favorite at Chase Center because he's doing exactly what they got him to do, which is to help fill up the buckets that are not being filled anymore by Clay or Durant.
Score some points, man. Yeah.
What's that?
Score some points.
Yeah, just go get buckets. And then, okay, so they will be in position, I don't know, maybe 6th, 7th, maybe 8th when Clay comes back. And then he comes back. Let's say they get up to the 6th seed. Nobody is going to want to face that team.
No. Absolutely. My thinking is that you got the core three. You got Clay, Steph, and Draymond. Right? And you don't get a core three like that. Most teams never get a core three like that.
Right.
Every 10 years, every 20 years, every 30 years, most people never. But to give up on that core three and just say, okay, we're going to dump this and we're going to play it for 2 years down the road would be crazy. I think they're playing as much as they can for next year. And not just to make the new Chase big ticket high roller fans happy, but to maximize that big three and to me it's very exciting. I think it's I'm looking forward to next season.
I am too in a big way. And I yesterday we were talking about George Steinbrenner and owners and what their role is, what you should be looking for in an owner. Steinbrenner got a lot of negative attention. He was, you're fired. The Billy Martin gets fired five times in a day. It almost got, they turned it into a cartoon. But there were some people that really could not stand the Yankees at Steinbrenner because they would say, well, Steinbrenner's just, he's trying to buy championships. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with that? I want my owner to go try to buy championships.
Exactly, yeah. By the way, Steinbrenner once threw me out of Yankee Stadium, by the way.
You got to tell the story now.
Yeah, it's a quick story. In 1978, I'm a rookie beat writer. I'm covering the Angels, and the team goes to New York. And I'm new on the beat. I have no idea how to do anything. And every day, I go out for a little jog. And so I'm jogging in New York City. And another beat writer, Tracy Ringlesby, who's also covering the Angels, says to me, he says, just come out to the ballpark really early and run in the outfield. And then go and take a shower in the clubhouse and tip the clubby $5 and you're cool.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bad idea. I didn't realize it then. But I did it. I go out like 3 hours before the game, run my little 2 miles in the outfield or whatever, and go and shower in the clubhouse. And as I'm coming out of the shower, this guy hands me a typewritten note signed by George Steinbrenner. It says, no unauthorized people are allowed on the field. Apparently, he'd been sitting up in his office and saw me jogging around the outfield and said, hey, who's that guy out there? What's he doing there?
Oh, you got booted by the boss.
I got booted by the boss, yeah.
That's a good story. Do you bust that out at parties?
What's that?
Do you bust that story out at parties? You're going to win any contest.
I got a lot of stories, Herbs. Come on, man.
All right, I want you to give me a story about, let's say a child walks up to you in 5 years, Scott, and this kid's 8 years old. And he says, Scott, I miss the Kevin Durant era of Warriors basketball. Can you tell me about it? Tell me, like, real quickly, if you had to do it, Scott, the Cliff's Notes version of Kevin Durant and the Golden State Warriors.
Wow. It was a freaky thing that they got him, and I was against it. Don't get this guy. You got your team. You're going to bust it up. He came in. He changed everything. He was an interesting guy, a great guy, a phenomenal player, in some ways a good teammate, a quirky guy, and his stay here was super riveting, interesting, and dynamic. Man, the guy was a phenomenal player, and anybody who saw him and didn't appreciate him, just get out of the NBA, forget about it. And so it was a great 3 years, great three-year run, and they moved on.
Hey, Scott, I think I was one of the maybe I was the only knucklehead out here. I really thought he was coming back because I looked at the situation that he would have to be walking away from. And yeah. Even if you gave me the best case scenario that doesn't include the Warriors, I couldn't think for the life of me, Scott, why anybody would want to leave this situation if basketball is important to you. And KD has told us time and again, I just want to hoop. I just want to hoop. Well, the hoop situation in Golden State's pretty damn good.
You know, like 2 years ago, might have been his first year, KD's first year here, I did an interview with him, and he told me how he was hoping someday to be an NBA owner. You know, he wanted to buy in as a team, buy a part of a team or whatever. And he was considering this, his stay with the Golden State Warriors, as school. Mm. He was learning stuff. He was learning stuff from Joe Lacob. He was learning stuff from Steve Kerr. He was learning stuff from the front office, Rick Welts, the whole picture, right?
Yeah.
He was really going to school here. He said, this is a phenomenal organization. I'm learning what it takes to run a team. And he was really, you know, he would pull these guys aside. Hey, he would talk to them. And I thought, well, why not continue this education, right?
Right.
Where are you going to go? You're going to go to the Knicks? What are you going to learn there?
Yeah, all the best professors are right here.
Yeah. And so I was with you. I thought there was a strong chance he would come back. But, you know, Kevin, he's an unusual guy, and God love him. I don't think he's a bad guy at all. I think that just he's a quirky guy.
Yeah, I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. I do not begrudge Kevin Durant any of the decisions that he's made. I mean, that they went after him so hard in Oklahoma City when he left. It's almost like they forgot that he signed an extension there.
Right.
I mean, the guy gave him 9 years, and you want more loyalty? When do owners show loyalty to players? Not very often.
Yeah, that was cruel and crazy, the way that the fans and the team and everybody else treated him when he left OKC. I don't care what he did there, I don't think he committed any crimes. The way they treated him, you know, the cupcake stuff and all that stuff, I thought that was really crazy and cruel. And he's, you know, he's like a kid that's in your family who is not perfect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't follow all the rules. He's a little bit tougher to deal with. He's a little bit high maintenance, but has a good heart. I'll tell you what. There was a story like two or 3 years ago, maybe in the finals, and a bunch of us writers were talking to Bob Myers. And Myers said, we're just talking, and he said, who on this team, who do you think loves basketball more than any other player? And you know, I said, I don't know, Steph Curry. You know, he's got the joy, and he certainly loves the game, and he works crazy at it. And somebody else said, maybe Clay. And then he said, no, it's not even close. You know, it's Kevin Durant. He loves basketball. He loves basketball. And that's a deep thing. And I think everything he does is kind of predicated on that. And it's not predicated on how much money can I get or who can I team up with and all that stuff. I know he's a weird dude, but he's all basketball.
I guess that's why I'm so puzzled, is because he has said how important basketball is to him. And again, I can't think of one good basketball reason to leave his situation. But look, it's free agency. You're free to do whatever you want to do. It seems like some Warriors fans have also forgotten that when KD got here, he took less money to make sure that Livingston and Iguodala were still here. He's not a bad guy. He's just a weird dude. That's it. There's a lot of weird dudes in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and I for whatever it's worth, I wish him well down the line. Although, you know, I can't imagine, okay, you're going to trade Steph Curry for Kyrie Irving? Okay. I'm going to do that as well. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, once you...
The Warriors fans for the Brooklyn fans? Okay, go ahead.
Once he gets a load of Kyrie and full Kyrie, it's not going to be pleasant for him, nor is that first...
Well, they're buddies. He knows him, so I...
Right.
You know, he knows what he's doing, and he's doing what he wants to do, so God bless him.
And how about this? The first time Durant goes into any sort of slump or the Nets aren't playing good basketball with him in the lineup, I think he might be in for a rude awakening if he couldn't handle the softest Charmin Bay Area media market.
We're vicious here, Derbs.
We are. And you're the leader of the pack, man. You are a mean-spirited person, Scott Osler.
Well, I was the guy that asked him the question that caused him to say, I'm Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Don't you know who I am? Kevin Durant. So.
That's your little contribution to NBA history. Thank you for that. Hey, Scott, we're up against it, man. I got to bounce. We've got another hour to go, and we have been kicking around the idea that the dynamic duo is the new big three, because it used to be, even as recently as last year, let's just get three superstars and we'll be good to go. And now it seems like every team has two, but maybe they figured out three alphas in the same locker room isn't the best idea. So looking forward to seeing the dynamic duo that is Steph Curry and D'Angelo Russell next year. I'm nothing but positive about the Warriors going forward. And I appreciate your time so much. I know asking you to give some of it on the weekend is a tough ask, but you've been good to me, Scott. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
I'm a fan, Herbs. Carry on, man.
All right. I'm a fan of your kid, man. Keep up the good work. He's a good egg, right, Noonan. We're going to take just a quick timeout, and then we are going to get to the aforementioned greatest duos in the NBA, and I'm going to rank them for you. Because every team has, did I say press Democrat? Oh. Scott Osler is from the San Francisco Chronicle.
You know who I am.
I'm Kevin DeGrant.
Wait, his name is Kevin DeGrant.
Thank you. Oh, we haven't played that enough. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into good for ball, bad for ball. And I am also going to explain to you why Zion Williamson is bad for the NBA. On 95.7.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.